European Football Weekly. I'm Dan Riccio. Derek Brandeo is here as well. It is a Champions League final post-game review show. Bayern Munich, champions of Europe for the fifth time in their history. They are the fourth team to do so. We will go over everything that happened at Wembley Stadium today in the Champions League final for 2013. Bobby McMahon will join us. John Molinaro, Gerard Peters. And of course, Nigel Reed of the Soccer Show will join us as well, as we'll have a revolving door of Sportsnet people around here in the Sportsnet 590 The Fan studios today. At EFWSN 590 is where you can find us on the Twitter. Lots of stuff going on in this game. Arjen Robben scores the winner in, what was it, the 87th minute, I think. Unbelievable that Arjen Robben, the perennial loser when it comes to finals, the guy who never seemed to get it done in finals. Let's remember the final of 2010 when Bayern couldn't score against Inter Milan. The final last year when Arjen Robben missed a penalty in extra time against Chelsea. Absolutely unbelievable. Arjen Robben, I don't even know what to say about that. So much more going on here as well. We had Gerard Peters was doing a live chat on sportsnet.ca, taking on everything that you had to say. We'll get his thoughts on the game, and as well, we'll also talk to him about what went on in that live chat. There was a lot of stuff that really happened in this game, and including the penalty. And our listeners know me. I'm a big Italian Serie A fan, and it was a lot. It was all Italian referees today. And it was funny to see on Twitter that a lot of people were praising the referee, and they said he did a really good job, and the penalty was rewarded properly, and all that good stuff. But if it were to happen in Italy, everybody would be on his ass, really. Plain and simple, that's what would have happened. Derek.
Hello, Dan.
Yeah. So, Arjen Robben. Derek Brandeo is here alongside me at EFWSN 590 on the Twitter. Dan.Riccio at sportsnet590.ca. Derek, Arjen Robben, was there any more unlikely person to score that goal so late on in this game? Would anybody? Maybe Mandzukic, Müller, anybody could have scored.
I wouldn't say unlikely. I would say fitting to, we all remember the penalty miss that you said before. Not only that, the great chance that he had with Holland to put Spain away when Schneider released him and he couldn't find space between Casillas' legs. It's almost it's fitting. It's bittersweet for him. He's definitely probably going to be the most comfortable sleep of his entire life will be tonight. He's going to sleep like a baby tonight. Let's put it that way. Like a huge monkey has been lifted off of his back, and he can finally say that, he scored the winning goal in a major title.
Yeah, and it was a wonderful goal. There's really no other way to put it. It seemed like three guys went in for a challenge, Piszczek, Hummels, and he avoided both of them, and then a cute little finish around Weidenfeller, who was, at that point, saving everything.
Both him and Neuer were phenomenal this game.
Yeah, and there was chances going both ways. I was talking to a few people before the game, and I really felt like there would be a lot of chances both ways, but because both goalkeepers, are so good at what they do, it wouldn't be that high scoring of a game, and it turns out it wasn't.
No, it could have been easily 2-1 going into the half, I think. Robben, of course, with the face shot on Weidenfeller as well, plus an earlier miss.
In the face!
Take that. And then, finally breaking through, I guess. Maybe that had something to do with psyching Weidenfeller out on that last one. It was still a brilliant. I noticed that the deep runs were starting to have a lot more effect, though, in the game as well, which probably had something to do with how tired it seemed that Borussia had gotten as well.
Yeah, Borussia Dortmund, and I opined on Twitter at EF, or sorry, not at EFW. My own account on Twitter is at DanRiccio590 on Twitter. And I said Borussia Dortmund might rue the day that they did not score in the early goings of this match, because they were playing really well. The high press up the pitch was really affecting Bayern's ability to move the ball forward, and it resulted in a lot of good chances for Borussia Dortmund, which they did not finish. And then as the game wore on, their work rate went down, and Bayern got more and more of the ball, and they got more and more chances. And it seemed like it was only a matter of time before Robin, or somebody else, it ended up being Robin, put the ball in the net.
Yeah, the pressure in the middle of the park on Schweinsteiger and Javi Martinez definitely subsided, and that's probably what was able to facilitate some of the possession that Bayern seemed to have. But the Bayern goal, though, came from kind of it was the first time that I kind of think that the Borussia players didn't run back. It was just a simple cluster of players in the midfield, pass back to Neuer. Neuer just boots it up, and all of a sudden six players are stuck behind the ball, or ahead of the ball on Borussia's case, and Robin and Fribri were able to kind of, you know, finally break and get some space and worked a little magic there.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what happened. At Philip Kwok writes in, and I thought my prediction of Neuer scoring was crazy. let me just tell you, Philip, he tweeted us earlier in the day at EFWSN590 saying his prediction was that Neuer would score the winning goal of the match, which was obviously ridiculous, and he was being a little bit tongue-in-cheek with it. But he's making reference to Robin scoring the goal and how crazy it seems. The whole world, all of Twitter was on Robin, and he always doesn't show up in the big game. Where is he? He tries to put the team on his back too much, takes everything on his shoulders, and forgets his teammates, and it ends up working against him because he's trying to do too much himself. And today, he ends up being the hero.
Yeah, it's the misses that I think have really spurned on the venom from, I think, everybody else around him, because, you know, he does play well. There's been a few games where, he does have that streak where he kind of just starts to go off on his own and tries to do everything himself. But it's the glaring misses that I think are the real eyesore in his game. If he didn't have those glaring misses, then we wouldn't be talking about it. Even if he just scored one of those, you wouldn't be saying the things that you say today about him. But he's kind of laid that to rest, at least for tonight.
Yes, he definitely has. European Football Weekly, I'm Dan Riccio. That was the voice of Derek Brandeo. We are here with a Champions League final post-game show. We will get to Bobby McMahon, Gerard Peters, John Molinaro is going to drop by. Lots of good stuff happening here today on the European Football Weekly post-game show. And let's go over some of the goals. We got the goals here. Let's recap what happened here in the Champions League final at Wembley. The first half, as we talked about, was mostly Dortmund on the run of play. Maybe not mostly, I shouldn't say that, but they definitely had the better chances in the first half. I think we can agree on that, and it was Neuer making the saves.
Yeah, Neuer definitely had come up bigger in the game. The counterattack was working very well for Borussia. It didn't look like Bayern had much of an answer except for the few, you know, chances that they did muster up. But if you had taken a picture of just the first half and, you know, we're trying to estimate what would happen in the second, it was definitely looking like Borussia was going to have the number today, and Bayern again was not going to be successful.
Yeah, and I think we can both agree that as the game wore on, and even the first half, as it wore on, Bayern grew in confidence, and it seemed like it was going to be the story of the second half, and surely enough, I think it was.
Yeah, Javi Martinez was the one player I noticed in the middle of the park constantly stepping in on Borussia's attempted passes forward, and he looked to be that he was getting better and better, and eventually Schweinsteiger started to make much more of an impact in the second half as well.
Yeah, and Schweinsteiger, and I think that has a lot to do with Borussia's work rate going down as the game wore on. They really seemed to fatigue as the game wore on. Into the second half, it was 0-0 at the half, 0-0, and, well, Bayern would open up the scoring through Mario Mandzukic.
Ribery with a chance to cut inside and to find Robin. Bayern in front. It's Mario Mandzukic.
That was the opening goal of the game from the Croatian Mario Mandzukic. Pretty impressive that there was so much great play in this game and so much lovely football to watch. And then it was the scrappiest goal ever.
to open
the scoring.
It wasn't something that you would have expected. But, you know,
a couple of bounces here and really
it was a Mario Gomez goal, actually.
Yeah.
If anything,
so. The Gianpaolo Pizzini of goals. But really, it all started from Neuer just hoofing the ball up the pitch.
Just completely, it seemed that the Borussia players just looked at the ball and just kind of forgot that they have to run back on a play, and they got caught up. And they did still have the numbers. It's just that Ribery was able to slink one through to Robin, and then Robin was able to just, you know, kind of dink it across the goal, and there was Mandzukic to just pot it away.
And that's exactly what happened. Mandzukic, right place, right time. The deflection off Weidenfeller found him rather than a Borussia Dortmund defender. And, well, he's shown this year he was worthy of the purchase that they made for him last summer. And right now, as we speak, Bayern Munich are hoisting up the Champions League title on Sportsnet, and they're passing it around between the players, obviously having a great time. Third time in 4 years that they were there, but this is the first time they have won it. And that is a lot to do with why we were trolling a little bit on Arjen Robben to start the show. As we were talking about, we're going through the game and reminding you of what happened on to the next goal. Mandzukic opened the scoring, but not long after, it was Ilkay Gundogan with the penalty kick goal. And rather than playing the clip, let's just talk about it. Dante with a rather foolish challenge, and rightly so, a penalty was called.
Yeah, Royce coming in through with a run, getting dinking the ball ahead, and Dante just kind of leaves his leg up, and down goes Royce, and the referee has no choice but to give that call. So.
Yeah, no choice. And the only thing I might say is that Dante maybe should have got his second yellow card there.
Possible, but it wasn't such an egregious.
The
penalty's enough for me. You know,
especially in a final, right? Yeah, the referee, he doesn't want to decide the game, but he's got to make that call.
Penalty's harsh enough already. You know, that's a big moment in the game already. So
then put them down 10 men.
Sending Dante off would have really, you know, then he probably would have been getting killed like he would be in Italy if he pulled that maneuver. So,
well, as I said, in Italy, it wouldn't have been fun.
Maybe it was a little self-preservation there.
But it seems like a lot of people on Twitter agreeing with the call, and that's good. And maybe the only thing they're saying is that Dante should have gotten a second yellow for that penalty he gave to Dortmund. Anyways.
Yeah. We've seen a lot of harsh reds and yellows already in this tournament. No need to bring that.
Nanny?
To that level.
Anyone? Nanny? Does anybody remember that?
Nanny, yeah? Are you okay?
Manchester
you okay,
United Nanny? Fans calling you out.
Nanny, are you okay?
Nanny, are you okay? But then that's pretty much where the game turned to Bayern in general. And Bayern, they didn't fold after giving up that goal. They rather picked up the play, and it seemed like Borussia seemed to be happy now that they got back into the game. They were level, and it just seemed like
the further that once they passed like the 75th minute, it seemed that they were happy to take this to extra time and
maybe bring on a
fresh face in Scheiber, and maybe that would change things around for them. But that's the problem with Borussia. As brilliant as they are, they're not deep enough. And when you get into a game like this, it becomes I hate to say the word war, but it becomes a war of attrition between the two teams. And as you can tell, Bayern are way, way deeper.
Oh, yeah, by far. And
they're already missing Toni Kroos, which is huge for them. And they were just able to plug in, you know, Martinez without even missing a beat. Martinez looked like one of the best players on the park at times for me. And Kroos is supposed to be one of the best midfielders in the world this year, at least the way he was playing for them. So they didn't even really miss a beat there. They were able to crush Barca, not a problem at all.
Yeah, and that was the big talk going into the game, is that the depth of Borussia Dortmund is just nowhere near Bayern's. And, well, they may have missed their chance, because they're losing Götze. They probably going to lose Robert Lewandowski. Lukas Piszczek is getting a lot of talk. Even that guy in the center of the park, Ilkay Gundogan, their goal scorer today, he's getting a lot of talk about a transfer,
everybody too. Everybody on that team is being eyed upon by somebody in Europe right now. The only problem is they can't sell everybody, so they won't, obviously. But there's already talk that, yeah, like you said, Lewandowski's going. Piszczek's been looked at for the last year. I think they've been able to hold off. But someone's going to come in with the money, and when you come in with the money and you reach that buyout clause, there's nothing you can do.
More breaking downage of this game on Sportsnet590.ca is coming your way. Bobby McMahon of Fox Soccer News and Sportsnet's Soccer Central on Sportsnet World is coming up next as European Football Weekly continues on Sportsnet590.ca. European Football Weekly is back. It is a Champions League post-game review show right here on Sportsnet590.ca. I'm Dan Riccio. Derek Brandeo is alongside me. And we have Mr. Bobby McMahon on the line joining us to talk about this game at Wembley Stadium. Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund. Bayern, fifth time in their history, European champions. Bobby, first, thank you for joining us here on European Football Weekly. And what'd you think of the game? I know you didn't like, you definitely didn't enjoy that pregame show. You didn't mince words very much on Twitter. Okay, so Bobby is not quite there just yet, but we'll get him back on the line, of course. So, yeah, if this was one of the craziest parts of the game. Twitter kind of just blew up on the pregame show, which... Not the pre-match ceremony, I guess you could call it. It was just, I don't know. It was very, very strange. By far, it was maybe one of the strangest things I've ever seen. It didn't really make any sense whatsoever, if you ask me. I don't know. Bobby, I think we have you back on the line. Bobby McMahon of Sportsnet Soccer Central is back now with us. Bobby, you weren't mincing words on Twitter. What was going on in that post that pre-match ceremony?
I have no idea. I don't know who's responsible for putting that embarrassment on show publicly.
Yeah, it's embarrassing,
inappropriate, and just a waste of space.
Yeah, and a waste of our time. And good thing the match kind of put it all behind us. Sorry to all the listeners for bringing that back up, but a great match overall. Chances at both ends. For us, we talked about it in our first segment here. It just seemed like a little bit of Borussia Dortmund tiring out as the match went on.
I thought it was a terrific game of football. Lots of contrast, lots of different phases of the game showing, you know, the both coaches trying to gain an advantage with how they approached it. Dortmund obviously started very, very well. And really had Bayern Munich pinned back, pressed them very, very hard. And then that sort of second quarter of the game in the first half, or the second half of the first half, Bayern began to come back into it. And the second half, I thought Dortmund actually, for a period there, you know, kind of sensed they might even go on and win it.
Yeah.
But eventually, I thought the big difference was, I think maybe you could look at two differences. One was Dante not getting a second yellow card for the penalty kick that was awarded to Dortmund. But the second one was Heinkes' decision to give Arjen Robben a much freer role, pull him in from that right side in the second half. And he finished up scoring one and creating one, both from central positions. And that turned out to be really, the major coaching decision that really swung the game.
Yeah, it seemed to open up the space for him to allow him to make those deep runs that he was made for, especially for the second goal. How much do you think Götze not being able to offer that extra, you know, point of attack from them, because it didn't really look like that his replacement, Goitzucker, I think I got his name wrong there.
Grosskreutz
there, but it didn't seem that he was able to apply the same pressure. And
he's just a different type of player.
Yeah,
and Grosskreutz is very hardworking. He's got a reputation for showing great stamina, but he's not the kind of player that's going to take on defenders. He's not the player. He's kind of player that's going to play a creative pass and behind the defence. He's not going to cut a defence open. So I think, you know, Götze missing, that obviously upsets him. It also upsets a little bit of the rhythm as well, because Marco Reus, although I thought Marco Reus was excellent today, moving him in the centre, and usually what you see is Götze starts in the middle, Marco Reus starts on that left and makes cuts from the left side into the centre, and you sometimes see Götze either switching left or switching right as well. So I think that kind of restricted that fluidity that we usually see from Dortmund as well, and that was a major, you know, that was a major detraction for them as well. But you know, they knew for a while that Götze wasn't going to, certainly this week he wasn't going to play, but that maybe talks to the overall depth of the team, because let's remember Arjen Robben wouldn't be playing if Toni Kroos was playing.
Yeah, that's true. And it's just incredible how deep Bayern is. We've talked about it all season long here on European Football Weekly. They're so deep, and they have so many attacking players. And I don't know what it was in the second half, but Bastian Schweinsteiger really seemed to impose himself more as the game went on.
Yeah, the first half you saw him, and Dortmund trying to do the same thing at the beginning of the second half as well, as Bayern started pressing them. But that first 15-20 minutes when Dortmund were pressing high up the park, what Schweinsteiger did was drop deeper, because then they could split the centre halves and push the fullbacks further forward. So that allowed them, that gave them more outs, that gave them more possibilities to play out from the back. So Schweinsteiger essentially was playing almost as a third centre-back for a good part of that first half, until Bayern Munich started getting some possession and some grip on the game. And actually Dortmund tried to do the same thing for parts of the second half as well, when Bender finished up dropping back on occasion to try and give, when Bayern started pushing higher up the park and begin to put pressure on the Dortmund back four. But also, I think the question mark ultimately as well, Dortmund on both the goals, it wasn't tremendously good defending either, was it?
No, and the first goal, we weren't sure exactly what happened, but Manu Neuer, he just kind of hoofed the ball up the pitch. And
well, let's give him some credit. That was a great bit of
stuff. It was Peter Cech-esque.
Because Schweinsteiger plays it back to him, and quite honestly, it's a brutal pass back.
Yeah.
It's a really dangerous pass back, and Neuer takes it down on his thigh. He plays it right down the middle. It's Mandzukic that takes it down with his chest. Robin picks the ball up in the centre circle. He runs with it, gives it to Ribery. Ribery then pulls three defenders to him, and Robin runs off the back of the defenders and slots the ball back to Mandzukic, who's made a third player run into the box. So it was, you know, it was Neuer almost with that long ball. It was Neuer with the long ball that really set everything up, and it was started with, as I say, a brutal pass back from Schweinsteiger.
It's very rare that you see the goalkeeper able to break the pressure of the defense with a simple pass of the ball.
Yeah, it was excellent from Neuer.
Indeed. I just wanted to touch on a lot of people kind of thought that Bayern were a little off their rocker for paying for $40 million for a defensive midfielder in Javi Martinez. Yeah. But how important has he been really to this Bayern team? Because he's been able to solidify, for me, what sometimes seems to be a bit of a question mark in their defense, because Dante can, you know, have the lapse every once in a while. Badstuber's been hurt. And of course, Boateng's been known to as well be able to be gotten every now and then with some emotions in himself as well.
Yeah, and you look at, you know, the fact that it's Gustavo that's been the guy that's been dropped to the bench really and become the substitute for the likes of Martinez. Gustavo last year, I thought at times looked like a really good player, and at other times he looked like a disaster waiting to happen. I think that inconsistency was really a question mark over Bayern Munich last year, and I think that's what they got in Martinez. I think what Martinez gives them is a really solid platform to build from. He's just so reliable. He's very mobile. He wins tackles. He intercepts. He's strong in the air. I think that was, you know, one thing that showed up again in the first half there.
Yeah, in the first half of the first half.
It looked like they were going to score. They were going to score from a set play, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he was moving up, and they got a couple other players up there. Mandzukic can be dangerous in these situations as well. But yeah, Martinez, it's one of these situations when you look at it and say, you know, $40 million, that's a lot of money, as you point out, a lot of money for that kind of player.
Yeah.
But then you look at the payoff and you say, that was pretty well, that was money well spent.
They finally got over the hump with Javi Martinez in the lineup.
Yeah.
It is Bobby McMahon joining us here on European Football Weekly. We are breaking down the Champions League final from every which way that we possibly can. Bayern Munich, for the fifth time in their history, European Cup champions. And Bobby, let's talk about these teams and the future that might happen with them. Borussia Dortmund, they're losing Mario Götze. They will most likely lose Robert Lewandowski. Who knows what else they may lose. But as for Bayern, is this maybe the beginning of a little bit of a run they can go on European dominance?
I don't so much. I don't go with this dominance kind of idea, because I think when you get right down to the Champions League is a knockout competition. And I've always believed knockout competitions in their various forms. When
right.
you get past the group stage, you've got two legs and then you've got the final. The bottom line is, you know, you're just really susceptible. League championships are one thing. They reward consistency. But the ability to go through these kind of knockout competitions, I believe, is the lifeblood of the game, because we need surprises, we need shocks, we need on that day for the better team sometimes to lose, because that's what keeps on drawing us back. League champions are something different. But I think what it does do for Bayern Munich, most definitely, it gives them, they've got the financial resources, they have the sporting infrastructure, they're developing young players. They're obviously a well-managed club from both the business side and the soccer playing side. So they very much tick all the boxes. So can we say they're going to dominate European soccer? I think that's a bit of a stretch. Can we say that they are going to be one of the top three or four teams that we're probably going to think are potential winners every year? Yeah, I think that's probably likely.
I agree. They're most likely going to continue this kind of form that they've been on for the last few years. After all, three finals in the last 4 years is pretty dominant in itself.
Yeah. Well, you look at just, for example, like that's Philipp Lahm, and these players just off the top of my head here. Ribery didn't play in 2010 because he was suspended, but Robin played in 2010. Mm-hmm.
Schweinsteiger
played. Mueller played, Lamb played, especially, Alexa Mueller is still a very young player. Mm-hmm. And there's probably a couple others I've kind of forgotten of already. But that's
Gomez was there at the time as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, they played three finals. They've been involved in three finals in 4 years. And some of them are still very young players. Like Thomas Mueller is only 23, for example.
Yeah.
and it kind of looks like they've kind of brought in his replacement for next year. Because where else is he going to play? Because he's going to...
The interesting thing I find about Mueller is one of these players, you know, I know this is probably a little bit of a stretch, but it might mean some of the Arsenal players. Like going back to that great team Arsenal in the early part of the last decade when Ray Parlour was there. Ray Parlour was the kind of player you always wondered why he was in the Arsenal team until you saw him getting down and gritty. Mm-hmm. And Mueller, I think, is one of these players as well. From a technical point of view, you question why he's got a place in that team.
He does look awkward at times.
Yeah, but my God, does he find space?
Yeah.
Does he read the game well? Has he got that burst of space to burst of pace to take advantage of defenders that go sleeping? You look at the number of times he caused problems today, and he just has that knack of being in the right place at the right time, and he also works incredibly hard. So, yeah, on a technical basis, you think, well, why does he get his place? But he's just a very effective player.
Yeah, and I think... Personally, for me, I think it'll be Arjen Robben who's the odd man out.
I think Robben's gone. I would agree with you.
Yeah, especially now. It's fitting that he got the goal, because he got the goal that finally put this Bayern team over the top, and he might be the first one out in the summer.
Yeah, well, I go back to 2010 when they lost to Inter Milan. You go back to that time where Ribery was out for that final. Robben was the hope in that game. Bayern Munich's hopes were getting pinned all on Arjen Robben to do it. And quite frankly, that night, he hardly got a kick of the ball in the Bernabeu against Inter. And then you go back to last year. Well, Bayern Munich fans don't need to be reminded of the disaster that was last year in terms of missed penalties and missed opportunities, particularly in extra time when he missed that one. So, and even it looked like history was going to repeat itself a little bit, because the first half, he missed a couple of very good chances.
Yeah, yeah. Wyden fell in with his face.
Yeah, right in the noggin.
Right in the kisser.
The face save. It will be forever remembered as the face save now.
Yeah.
He's Bobby McMahon, at Bobby Soccer Rep on Twitter. And you can find him on Sportsnet World every couple days on Sportsnet Soccer Central. Bobby, really appreciate you doing this, and hope to talk to you again soon.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks a lot, Bobby.
Thank you.
And, yeah, Bobby said it. This could be a Bayern team that will be great for a long period of time, but they may not dominate the European Cup championships. It's just too hard to do. I think gone are the days of Ajax in the early 70s winning three in a row.
If what we all thought was, you know, one of the greatest teams of all time in Barcelona only seems to appear to have maybe a 4 or 5 year cycle, then how can you expect any team really to...
Yeah.
To go on to, you know, just completely rewrite history and dominate this competition. It's too difficult. There's too many outside factors, I think, that, you know, not including, you know,
and too
decisions.
Many super teams now.
Exactly.
Teams have so much money. They're just going to spend money on everybody and just try to win that way.
Bayern spent money last year. You know that Chelsea's going to go and spend some money.
Oh, Chelsea's. There's already rumors of Mourinho coming in and wanting to spend £100 million.
And we haven't even discussed of the new kids back on the block in Monaco who have just, you know, look like they're going to reassemble.
Well, don't have to worry about them in Champions League for a little while.
No. Go on.
We'll talk to Gerard Peters about Monaco and maybe Neymar to Barcelona. I saw on Twitter at Gerard Peters, he had some pretty interesting things to say about the Neymar situation as it stands right now. Some of the stuff that's going on Twitter. Alex, or at Brunswicky, writes in, "I'll be the first to admit my hating on Robin in finals, but he showed up tonight and Mueller was magic in the second half too." And we talked about it as we were watching the game here in the Sportsnet 590 of the Fan studios. Mueller left a little bit to be desired. Mueller left a little bit to be desired in the first half, but as at Brunswicky says, he was pretty darn good in the second half.
Yeah, no, he definitely was more involved. He looked awkward is what I'm trying to say, but he's effective. He's one of those guys that
Luca Toni used to look awkward too.
Yeah, exactly. And he's just
kind of lanky.
He's really great at setting a pick, he's a guy that just comes up with big goals too. He just seems to be one of those heart and soul guys for Bayern that just, you know, is better than what you think he is.
Yeah, I can agree with that too. And Brunswicky also writes in, Piszczek recently signed a 4-year extension with Dortmund, so he'll be around for a little while.
Maybe
I don't know.
Year.
Contract extensions in soccer really mean nothing. That is what it is. Right now, though, we will have another one of our great Sportsnet soccer analysts joining in on the conversation on the UEFA Champions League final, and that is the host of the Soccer Show right here on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Nigel Reed. Nigel, thank you.
My pleasure. Hi, guys.
Hi, Nigel.
How are you doing?
We're doing great. What a game it was, really. There was just so much action at both ends of the pitch. Both goalies had to make,
numerous
eye-popping saves at times, and really, it's a great story of German football.
Yeah, I think you actually are absolutely right there. What I enjoyed about this game was that it was a fantastic spectacle for the neutral. He didn't necessarily have to be in the red camp or the yellow camp pulling for either team. You could just sit down, watch that game and enjoy it for what it was. It was full of technical expertise, near misses, and of course the drama right at the end. I'm sure the scripters couldn't have put it better if they'd rehearsed it. So it was just a great game of soccer to watch.
Yeah, it definitely was. Nigel Reed of The Soccer Show is joining us here on European Football Weekly. I'm Dan Riccio. Derek Brandeo is alongside me. You talked about the storylines coming out of this game and how great it was for a neutral. One of the things that I was most worried about heading in is that all the talk would be about Mario Götze no matter what the outcome of the match. And it seems like, thank God, it seems like that's not the talk, and the talk is positive about the game.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you've got to fill column inches, I guess, guys, you know, in the run-up to the game, and there were various different strands you could select sort of 24 hours, 48 hours before the game. And, of course, Götze's presence or lack of presence on the field and his impending move from one to the other was obviously going to be one of the storylines. But wasn't it interesting when Dortmund scored their goal, that penalty? I think we got a clear indication.
Jubilation!
I think we got a clear indication of where his heart really is. But I'm sure that he can look forward to many successful years as a member of Bayern Munich. That was just pure instinct. He jumped out of his seat. Dortmund back on level terms as they deserve to be, because as far as the game was concerned, I saw a game where Dortmund were the better team for the first 25 minutes of that game. They settled quicker. They had more chances. They did start to look a little vulnerable on set pieces towards the end of the first half. Then Bayern get the goal. Dortmund have the staying power and the resolve and the belief to get back in it. No doubt about the penalty, by the way. I don't know what your other guys have said, but for me that was a stonewall penalty. If you kick somebody in the ribs, that's going to be a penalty. So let's forget the protests.
I think everyone's been in pretty much agreement with that.
Yeah, but no question about that. And then of course, Arjen Robben. Who else? You know, the man who should have won the World Cup final for Netherlands has been in this position before. and never seemed to deliver. And eventually, right at the death, he and Frank Ribery managed to combine, and the ball dribbles over the line almost in slow motion. So yeah, it was a terrific spectacle, great game of football. Two teams that were going at it. I always thought it would be tight. I was pretty much resigned to the fact that it was going to extra time, but just when we think we know what's going to happen, we find out that we don't. And of course, when Robin scores, then there's no time for Dortmund to respond. And I think also the other point I'd make is how well Bayern Munich have responded over the last 12 months. Let's not forget, it's this time last year, the heartbreak on their own field at the Allianz Arena, where they couldn't close the deal against Chelsea, lost on penalties in the Champions League Cup final.
Yeah.
That could really crush some teams. But Bayern Munich have been, well, better than ever this season. They've come back. They won the German Bundesliga by a country mile. They might win the German Cup as well. And now they've got the European Champions League prize, the big trophy, in their pocket as well. So fantastic resilience by the giants of German football to turn that round and to come back even stronger 12 months later.
Mm-hmm. What got to me the most was after seeing Robin's goal, as you said, in slow motion, even Gary Neville popped into my head as that ball was rolling into the net. And I just, the look on his face, it seemed like he didn't even believe that it finally had happened for him. He just had this look of complete astonishment and amazement that it finally, that weight had been lifted off of his shoulders. And I don't think a lot of people have, you know, realize the storylines kind of between like Borussia and this Bayern team, and the fact that, you know, Bayern has, as you said, been a bridesmaid for the last two of the last Champions Leagues as well, the last four now with this one. And yeah, it just speaks to the volumes of what I think this team can do in the future. And it's funny that we were just talking with Bobby that we all think that it could be that Robin, that's the one that ends up leaving. So it's a bittersweet pill for him. It's kind of funny to see that would happen though to him. Wouldn't you agree?
You just never know what sort of storyline fate has in store, do you guys? And Robin is one of those sort of polarizing characters. He's had the talent for many years. We all know that. A terrifically skillful technical player, but never seemed either for club or country to get the job done. And here on the biggest club stage of all, finally the ball drops to him. Manages to keep his composure because he had opportunities in the first half, of course, which one which smashed into the goalkeeper's face, one where the goalkeeper, you're beginning to think, oh, this is another night where Ian Robin's gonna get the close but no cigar award. But this time, with seconds remaining, finally the Ribery back heel manages to stay on his feet, evade a challenge, and just keep his composure. And sometimes that's the most difficult thing to do.
Especially in a match with 90,000 people watching you, right?
And the rest of the world watching as well. And he attempted to smash it, as he did in the first half. And finally he managed to keep his composure and finish the job. So well done to Ian Robin. If it's his last match for Bayern Munich, well, it is. But he's written his name large in that club's and this competition's folklore. There's no question about that.
That is the voice of Nigel Reid. At Nigel_Reid is where you can find him on Twitter. You can also hear him on The Soccer Show every Thursday night at 8 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Nigel, I'd be remiss if we didn't ask you, being that we are European Football Weekly and we like to focus on the European side of things, New York City FC and Manchester City and the New York Yankees all joining together to create New York City FC. What does this mean for Manchester, and how do you think they will use that MLS team to their advantage, or if they will use them in coherence with their English Premier League team at all?
Well, I think it's more for in a way it's the bigger story is for Major League Soccer. I mean, this, I suppose we're not quite sure how this will turn out in the next couple of years. They're not expected to start playing until 2015. But when you've got the wealth of Manchester City and the New York Yankees combining to put their weight, not only the money, but the marketing power behind a franchise in New York, It's great for the league. I mean, you could, if you're talking about Bayern Munich being the super club of Germany, perhaps New York City FC could very quickly become the super club of Major League Soccer. It lends cachet to the league. It will encourage, as Beckham and others have done, other players to look at MLS as a destination. And if Manchester City choose to use New York City FC from a player's point of view, not exactly as a farm team, but you know, as a place for young players to get playing minutes and competitive experience,
right,
then, you know, all well and good. I mean, it's not the first time. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, Premier EPL teams who, you know, will let players, young rising players, go on loan to second and third tier teams in England specifically for that purpose, to get them competitive experience, to get them hardened for the quicker, more technically difficult world of the EPL. So, I mean, if I was in charge of Manchester City, I'd be absolutely looking in that direction and saying, yeah, we can certainly send young players there. We can use it as a talent base and maybe for rehabbing players coming back. Go out there to New York, get some minutes in MLS, which is a physical athletic league, and get back on your feet. I would think it would be a perfect breeding ground.
You don't think that there's a possibility that they'll be using it to maybe put players like Roque Santa Cruz, who are, you know, still on contract, but eventually do go out on loan like that? That wouldn't be that bad of a something for the New York City fans as well, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different league. It's a different marketplace in North America, very different to England, and you know, somebody like that could come here, get his appetite, get his fitness back, score some goals, get his confidence back, and then, you know, Manchester City would be in a situation where they might want to take him back and give him some minutes in the first team, or failing that, perhaps it's an opportunity for the player to revive his career, stay a little longer, or to be put in the shop window and sold on to another club. So for Manchester City, from a playing perspective, it's win-win.
I agree. I'd be remiss without, you know, talking a little bit about Tottenham with you. Very heartbreaking. I myself had predicted that they would pip Arsenal in there, you know, but I was very wrong again. What are your kind of wishes? Obviously, Gareth Bale to stay, but what do you think? What would you do if you had the chance to go out and, you know, get two players? Who would you grab for Tottenham?
Goodness, I haven't even thought about that, which is why they don't pay me the large sums to be in charge of Tottenham. I mean, Derek, I'm just a fan like you are. I'm disappointed but not surprised, in all honesty, that Spurs didn't finish in the top four, even when they were third and seemingly too far away from Chelsea and Arsenal and one or two others. I always had the suspicion in the back of my mind that they would be caught and it would go down to the last day, and that's where they got to. Spurs did what they needed to do on the last day, but, you know, Arsenal were that point ahead. So it's going to be a very interesting summer. You know, I don't need to go any further than the comment you already made as far as Gareth Bale is concerned. The big question is, can Spurs hang on to him without the lure of Champions League soccer next season? They've, you know, he's been there this season, has had his best ever season with Spurs. He's only getting better, and he's also becoming a different sort of player. Let's not forget, 4 or 5 years ago, he was a left fullback. Then he was a left winger. Now he's a play anywhere kind of guy. You know, he's given free rein to weave his magic. So there's really only one question as far as Spurs is concerned: do they keep hold of Bale for another season, which will give them another opportunity to get back into the Champions League? If they can't hold on to Bale, then that makes a huge difference to the equation in the next EPL season.
Yeah, that's for sure, and it's going to be one of the great storylines to watch this summer. I, for one, hope he stays with the Spurs. Nigel,
that makes two of us.
That makes three of us.
All right, we're all on the same page for once here on European Football Weekly. Nigel, I want to thank you for doing this, and a reminder, you can catch Nigel Reed and Bobby Roushi on The Soccer Show every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Nigel, I appreciate you joining us here.
No worry, Dan. No worry, Derek. Have a good evening.
You too, Dan.
Cheers.
You too, Nigel.
All right, right here on European Football Weekly, we will take a quick break, And when we come back, Jarrad Peters will join us. He was running the live chat on sportsnet.ca/soccer. So be sure to join us for that right here on European Football Weekly, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Yeah, that's right. The winners of the 2013 UEFA Champions League, Bayern Munich, for the fifth time in their history, they have won the UEFA Champions League. Funny thing, if they would have lost, it would have been their sixth loss in a European Cup final, the most of any team. So, kind of a double-edged sword. They would have been the laughingstock rather than the heroes of the Champions League today. European Football Weekly, I'm Dan Riccio. Derek Brandeo is alongside me at EFWSN590 is where you can find us on Twitter. We're taking your tweets. Send us your thoughts on the game. Who was your man of the match? What were some of the things that you noticed in this match? Anything that you see fit to tweet into the show is more than welcome. We now welcome Jarrad Peters to the show, and he was running the Sportsnet.ca live chat during the game. So, Jarrad, how'd it go? Was there any crazy stuff going on there or what?
Hi, guys. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We ran the chat to kind of coincide as a match companion with the television coverage Sportsnet was doing. So we started off about an hour before kickoff, just after the team sheet came out, posted a few comments, interacted a little bit with the people who were watching Sportsnet coverage, and enjoyed what really was a really thrilling Champions League final, which you can't say for all of them.
No, you definitely can't. And we've talked about it with Nigel Reed and Bobby McMahon. There was a lot of chances going both ways. And you can argue that both of the goalies were the man of the match.
Yeah, this was a match played at a very high level. And I'm glad you mentioned the goalkeepers, because it seemed that at different times during the game, everybody got a chance to strut their stuff. The first half was kind of a story of missed opportunities. And Jan Neuer, I think he won the poll for our Sportsnet Man of the Match thing we had going on the live chat, made three really big saves in the first half, two on Lewandowski and I think the third on Marco Reus. Arjen Robben obviously had a hat trick of misses as well, one really indecisive and two that Roman Weidenthaler managed to stop. And then in the second half, you had Robben all of a sudden turning himself into a star, Schweinsteiger making some spectacular passes, and Mandzukic, Javi Martinez alongside Schweinsteiger really started in the second half. And then Frank Ribery got a chance to be in the spotlight as well with his really cute little back heel to Robin on the goal that ended up winning everything. So everyone kind of got a chance to star. And overall, I think it was a match played at a very high level.
Yeah, I agree. It was a very tactically played out match, especially in the first half. It definitely seemed that, you know, some of the, you know, at times Bayern's defensive midfield started to shine. And then, you know, the wingers started to shine as they moved the ball out and everything like that. Also, Jupp Heynckes was also a coach of Borussia Dortmund as well. So that's another side story, I think, that a lot of people don't really remember about this. And this final just seemed to be a culmination for Bayern of a process of like 3 years. And it's just interesting to see how they were able to build to this finally. And, you know, the culmination has been fantastic. If you can, you know, discuss how they've built their team a little bit.
This has definitely been coming for a while for them. They've certainly paid their dues, probably more than most other European champions. There was obviously the loss to Inter Milan at the Bernabeu 3 years ago, and last year's on penalties with Heynckes as coach. It's a wonderful way for him to go out, as we all expect he will. It was also a good advert for German soccer in general. I mean, obviously with the defeat of the Spanish giants in the last round, people have kind of been jumping to conclusions about just how dominant German football could be over the next few years. And I think even if that doesn't end up being the case, we got a really good look at just the quality of the top Bundesliga sides. And I think the league in general and those teams, I think Craig Forrest said it after the game, the brand that those teams will have advertised today will have done them a lot of favors.
Yeah, that's for sure. Jarrad Peters is joining us. He was running the Sportsnet.ca live chat. You can catch him on Bleacher Report. He's got a book. Jarrad, you're always tweeting about soccer. anywhere in the world, if there's a game on, you're watching it, it seems. As I follow you on Twitter, I'm just like, where is he finding streams for these games? I can't even believe it. But you're always tweeting about stuff, and I love it, and it's great. At Jarrad Peters on Twitter, if you want to follow him. I saw last night you were talking about Neymar, if we just step away from the Champions League final for a second. You were talking about Neymar and how he holds all the cards. This morning we wake up and we find out Real Madrid and Barcelona have had bids accepted. What do you think is next with Neymar in this transfer saga?
The thing with Neymar, and I don't mean to crow or boast about this, because I think a lot of people have followed him for a very long time, but I'm certainly one of them, going back about 4 years before this, just as he was coming out as a 16-year-old, really. He has never been rushed into any decision. His father has never been rushed into any decisions regarding mishandling. There have been dozens of offers that we haven't even heard about that have been made for this player. He does hold all the cards, because at the end of the day, even if he decided to stay at his current club, he could very well do that and make well over £1 million a month playing at Santos. So this is not a player that has to move for any particular reason or to prove any point. He can be a big star where he is. My gut feel is that he will join Barcelona over the next few days, and it'll be Santos encouraging him to do that. They're not making a decision for him, but he's out of contract next year. So I think even to do his club a favor, I mean, you don't want to have a Matt Lundin situation like in Toronto where he just leaves for nothing and you don't move him at the deadline. They want to get something for him, and I think they're good at it.
Yeah.
And I think he understands that as well. I mean, he loves that club. And he's going to try to bring some money in for them.
Yeah, it's about doing right by the club, as some fans would think. Let's talk about what Monaco is attempting to do in the French League, trying to, you know, it seems to be assembling the old Porto team of the Europa League that won there with Jaime Rodriguez now and Moutinho, and it looks like even Falcao.
Yeah, a part of you wonders if the Moutinho and the James Rodriguez deals weren't made with a mind to actually helping to lure Falcao there. Everyone expects that deal is going to go through. I think a lot of the key players have already kind of given that away. He himself hasn't said anything until that happens. We won't know for sure. But I thought that, you know, I think the 70 million euros that they paid for two very good players is just absolutely ridiculous.
Porto cashing in again.
Big time, and full credit to them. I like James Rodriguez as much as the next guy, but the valuation for him was just absolutely
He still hasn't reached that level yet. He's still young too.
It's like the fourth highest transfer fee ever paid for a player. Am I wrong on that? Yeah. Something stupid like that.
Yeah, the breakdown between Moutinho and Rodriguez hasn't really come out yet. It depends how they're going to evaluate both players' worth. But right now we just have kind of the overall package. But I do think a lot of that is, you know, meant to kind of have a little Porto reunion to welcome Falcao to Monaco.
Yeah, that's for sure. Let's get back to the Champions League now with Jarrad Peters. Sorry to just take you on a tangent there for a second. We talked with Bobby McMahon about the future of Bayern Munich. What's the future for Borussia Dortmund? Götze is leaving. Robert Lewandowski out of contract next season. You mentioned it with Neymar. Teams want to get them out before their contract ends. So that's likely going to happen with Lewandowski this summer.
Yeah.
Where do they go from here?
Yeah, just to warn you guys, my cell batteries are getting a little low here, so I want to try to get out before I cut out on
All right, quickly then.
I thought today was kind of a case of now or never for Borussia Dortmund. They're by no means in any kind of dire situation, even though they're going to be losing some good players. I think last summer they showed, after they lost Kagawa, that they could go out and pay a reasonable amount of money and bring Marco Reus in. So they're gonna be reloading in some capacity. Eden Dzeko is one possibility for them. There are a number of midfielders linked going there. So I don't know if I see them quite at the level they were the last 2 years, winning those back-to-back titles or getting to the final here today at Wembley. But I think there's still going to be a contending team in Germany going forward. They are in a way a selling club in the way they will move their very best players along.
Yeah,
they're still pretty high up in the German football food chain in that they can afford and have the financial muscle to bring in some pretty decent players themselves.
You can count me as a Borussia Dortmund fan as long as Ilkay Gündoğan's on that team, because I think he's a fantastic player.
He is a star man, and we're going to be seeing. He'll be at the World Cup with Germany next year. I'm not sure how much he's going to play, but he is a star man and one of the most underrated midfielders in Europe this year.
Yeah, I see a move to Real Madrid in his future myself.
Let's hope not. Anyways, Drad, thank you for joining us. Keep up the great work on sportsnet.ca and all the other stuff that you're doing. As I said, at Drad Peters on Twitter. Appreciate you doing this.
Cheers, guys. Fun time.
Thanks a lot.
Take care. All right. So, it's been a busy show so far, Derek. I'm breaking a sweat here. Good thing Bob McCowan has this thing set up like a meat fridge.
True.
It's just so cold in here
I'm
all the time.
Wearing like 3 sweaters and a jacket.
I'm going to get pneumonia in here. It's so
of course,
like
Dan,
cold
Dan's,
and hot.
Dan's just talking about the big story because he's got that huge, you know, personal sweater of his.
Thank you for bringing it up
here.
Yet again, that I wear 3 sweaters no matter what I'm wearing at any time of the day. This needs to move along right now.
He does
I'm Dan
a magnificent
Riccio.
Job of parting his chest hairs between his chin hairs. Let's just put it that way.
I'm Dan Riccio. Derek Brandeo just continues to chirp me for the immense amount of chest hair that I have. I'm Italian. What do you want from me? We have another Italian joining us in studio next. His name is John Molinaro. All that great content you find on sportsnet.ca/soccer.
It's that guy.
It's that guy. He's the one who coordinates all of it. So be tuned to... Be sure to stay tuned in to European Football Weekly, the UEFA Champions League final review edition. There's too many words in there. Anyways, John Molinaro next, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. European Football Weekly, UEFA Champions League review edition of the show. I'm Dan Riccio. Derek Brandeo is alongside me. At EFWSN590 is where you can find us on Twitter. Lots of stuff going on Twitter. We'll let you know what is going on there. Dan.Riccio at sportsnet590.ca. You can also email the show to give us your thoughts on Bayern Munich winning their 5th European Cup title. We've had Gerard Peters. We've had Nigel Reed, Bobby McMahon. And now the man that really runs sportsnet.ca/soccer and puts out all that great content that you see. John Molinaro is joining us right here in the EFW studios. John, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So we've been getting everybody's initial thoughts on the games and on the game. And essentially what we've heard was it was a lot of Borussia Dortmund at the beginning. Great attacking going either way. And eventually it just seems like the depth of Bayern won out.
Yeah, I think what really sort of stood out for me is that, first of all, I think a big pat on the back to the Italian referee.
Yeah.
Because he didn't sort of get bogged down in calling little niggly fouls and just let them sort of play. So I think that really set it up to be, the wide open attacking game that we saw.
It was funny because I was thinking aloud on Twitter and I was like, you know, I wonder what the reaction would be if this was a Serie A match, because every foul is so scrutinized there. Mm-hmm. The referee is always against us is essentially the thinking. But for this game, most fans all seem to really applaud the referee for the job that he did.
No, he had a very sort of delicate touch. And I thought, it just kind of lent itself to the attacking and open-ended game that we saw. And, you know, everyone is sort of focusing on the great attacking play of both teams, and that's great. But for me, I found it to be just a fascinating goalkeeper's duel. I think both played outstanding. And, the Dortmund keeper, whose name I keep mispronouncing.
Weidenfeller.
Thank you.
Feller.
For me, he was man of the match. I thought he just made some great saves. And Manuel Neuer, too. I mean, early on, he probably made about...
Kept him in the match early on.
Four or five saves in the opening 20.
The one on Blachikowski, the kick save on Blachikowski was fantastic.
Yeah.
Nothing goosebumps.
The face save for me is the highlight of the day.
Yeah.
Both goalies were fantastic, and it really put German football on a showcase, because both teams, obviously from Germany, and they were going at each other back and forth. Yeah, there might not have been a 4-3 final scoreline or 3-2, but there was chances throughout the whole game. And as a neutral, you were sitting at the edge of your seat the whole time. If you love football, this was the match to watch.
No, it was very enjoyable. I mean, from a spectacle, you know, it was very entertaining. And, you know, people are going to look at the scoreline. Oh, it was only 2-1 and it was 0-0 at half. But, you know, I found it to be pretty enthralling and entertaining throughout. I mean, it was never boring to watch.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, I don't think people take account of too much of how the actual play goes along and the interchanging of the players and just how I always like to look at when you see, you know, a bunch of passes going back and forth in the midfield, I always try to look at how the defense is set up because that's usually dictating how that play is going along. And I thought at the beginning, Borussia especially were extremely, really well, very rigid and kept that back line very well and kind of took away Mandzukic from them at the beginning. And that, of course, changed a little bit towards the end. Is that how you look at the game sometimes?
Yeah. What I also look at is how sort of, you know, the front guys, the forwards and the midfields kind of press, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that was really the key early on for Dortmund because they were really sort of on top of Bayern as they tried to build out from the back, and it really forced Bayern to play. You saw them kind of hoof all these kind of long balls. So I think, you know, that first sort of line of defense and playing that pressing game, it's an effective tool. You know, it's just not all teams can kind of keep it up for 90 minutes.
Yeah, and we've saw Bayern do that in the previous two rounds against Juventus and against Barcelona, but early on in this match, they weren't the ones pressing Dortmund. It was the other way around.
No, it was totally Dortmund. I mean, for the first 20, 25 minutes, it was all them. I mean, Neuer had to make some great saves, and as I said, they weren't giving Bayern much time on the ball at all. And then, Weidenfeller had to make that one great save, I think in the 25th minute. And that seemed to be the turning point. Then Bayern kind of grew in confidence and started to dictate a little bit more. And, you know, Robin, God, he scored so many chances in that first half.
Robin always has a lot of chances, but he finished the one that made a count in the end. John Molinaro of Sportsnet.ca is joining us here on European Football Weekly as we break down the UEFA Champions League final that was a 2-1 victory for Bayern Munich over Borussia Dortmund. And we haven't talked too much about the Mario Götze situation. I kind of wanted to avoid it a little bit. I'm happy that it hasn't ended up being the biggest storyline of the game. But how much of a difference do you think he could have made in this match?
Probably, I mean, a little bit more difference. I don't think Dortmund was lost without him.
Yeah.
I think, Marco Reus kind of stepped in admirably in that similar role. So, I mean, could he have pushed them over the top? It's possible.
Yeah.
But I don't think Dortmund was absolutely lost without him. And, you know, I never bought all this conspiracy stuff.
No, neither do I.
They had come to some sort of agreement. And, that's nonsense.
It's absolute nonsense. I think if you're a player, I mean, obviously I'm not a professional footballer, but if you're a player, I would think that if you're in a Champions League final like that, how many chances are you going to get like that in your career? You're going to want to win it and you're going to want to play in it no matter what the situation.
Those are your teammates for 12 months. You know, this is the team that you've gone through this entire experience with. You just can't turn that off and say, all right, I'm on the other side now. It doesn't work that way. It just seems to me, though, that this was definitely a culmination of, German football at its peak. But it just seems to me that it's destined for a downhill now because of how Bayern itself is weakening Borussia Dortmund. And that's a little unfortunate for me because, you know, even though these things go in cycles, you would have liked to have seen Borussia stay at that level for me.
Yeah, I think, you know, what we're going to see is with Dortmund anyway, is kind of like what we saw with Ajax when they beat Milan in the 1995 final.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was a great team with a lot of young players. And then one by one, they all got picked off by the likes of AC Milan and all the big clubs.
And Juventus.
Yeah. I mean, Götze was obviously going to Bayern Munich, but I don't think he's going to be the last guy to be sort of signed by some other deal.
Yeah.
You know, I suspect Lewandowski is going to be going somewhere. And who knows, maybe Marco Reus as well. But I just have a feeling that this team is going to be sort of disbanded now by all the vultures circling. And it's too bad because they were a fun team to watch. Dortmund is very fun to watch.
Yeah, and they were able to withstand, you know, Sahin 2 years ago, Kagawa this year. But that's only one player. It looks like that definitely, like you said, the vultures are coming in and they're going to pick off 3-4 guys this time around. And it's just sad to see a team like that just get completely, especially when they reach this height. You know, if they just stay together, who knows?
Yeah.
But money talks, so.
Money talks. That's the way the world of football works. It is European Football Weekly. Dan Riccio, Derek Brandeo, joined by John Molinaro. I want to kind of switch gears and maybe look a little bit ahead to next year. And obviously, Rafa Benitez, he's now signed with Napoli as just fresh off winning the Europa League with Chelsea.
Is that official? Because I keep hearing.
Aurelio De Laurinaitis made it official. Of Napoli.
I hear that he's made that as kind of like a ploy to make him decide. I don't know. But let's just say that he signed.
He definitely looks like he's on his way to Napoli. I think it's more than official. But what do you think he might bring to Napoli? And if he can maybe help them next year in their Champions League run?
Well, I think, you know, obviously he's an astute tactician. I don't think he quite gets the recognition that he deserves because he's, you know, he has won a Champions League. He's won the Europa League. He's won, you know, he did even before he came to England. I mean, he did quite well with Valencia.
Yeah.
So he's clearly, you know, an accomplished and astute tactician. I think for Napoli, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, the key thing is if they can hold on to guys like Edinson Cavani and Marek Hamsik. If they let those two guys go, you know, Rafa's going to have a pretty hard time of it. With all due respect to his managerial skills.
Yeah,
so,
especially if they don't use that money to reinvest.
Yeah, to reinvest and bring in new recruits. So I'll be quite interested to see, you know, if they can hold on to their core players, what players they can add to the mix, and how Rafa kind of does in Serie A. Because, I mean, you know, last time didn't do...
Didn't do very well with Inter Milan. Right. No, that's for sure. What are some of the stuff that we can check out on sportsnet.ca in terms of post-game reaction to the Champions League?
Oh, wow. We're going to have a lot of stuff. I'm working on a post-game blog right now that's going to totally break down the final. We're going to have the top 10. We're going to have a video segment of the top 10 goals of the Champions
Beautiful.
League season. We're going to have the archive of this podcast up on the website.
Yeah.
And a photo gallery of the best pictures and just sort of more videos. And, oh, yeah, we'll have, like, full, you know, if you've missed any of the game, you can watch full match highlights of the game. So we'll have, like, you know, complete and in-depth analysis of the post game.
Perfect. Awesome. That's more than we need here for us, at least. And all the listeners will probably enjoy that, too, I'm sure. Because there's definitely nothing better than reliving this game because it was a great one. John, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. In our last segment, we're just going to talk, maybe take a look back and a look ahead to next year a little bit more as we continue right here on European Football Weekly. I'm Dan Riccio. Derek Brandeo is alongside me. We'll talk to you in a couple minutes. European Football Weekly. I'm Dan Riccio. Derek Brandeo is alongside me. We have so many people to thank here on the show. I want to thank John Molinaro. He just joined us. I want to thank Nigel Reed. He joined us earlier. Jared Peters. Bobby McMahon. Just a revolving door here.
What about our...
I don't want to thank him.
We should thank our intern.
I was saving the grand finale to thank him.
All right, he shall go.
He wasn't even watching the game. He doesn't even like soccer.
I know. He's sitting there tweeting away. We asked
for somebody to help us with the show. They sent us some hockey guy. I'm just kidding, Brent. You've been wonderful for us today.
You have to deal with what you're given sometimes,
I guess. I'm just kidding. Brent's been great for us today, even though he isn't much of a footy fan. I think we've converted him.
Not really.
Not only is he subscribed to us on iTunes, where you can normally find the show.
That's just because he's tired of us saying, hey, did you subscribe yet?
We don't ask him.
Did you subscribe? Well, I remember the time you like grabbed him by the back of the head and like started twisting his ears and stuff.
I don't do that.
And then something along
I knock on the doors here.
You want to be swimming with the fishes, see? Something like that?
No, it's more like The Simpsons. Knock. Who's there? Hired goons. I didn't hire any goons. No, that's not exactly what I do. But yes, let's get back to...
Let's get back to your other job, which is hosting the show, not your
Let's not get your back to the good stuff.
Thuggery.
At EFWSN590 is where you can find us on Twitter. If you liked my Homer Simpson impression, send us a tweet.
Don't encourage him, folks.
If you didn't like it, send me a tweet also. I don't care. I always enjoy the interaction. We'd love when you join the conversation here on European Football Weekly. We've talked so much about the game. I wanted to take a quick look back on these teams. Bayern, they were the best team in the tournament by far. I mean, they defeated Juventus and Barcelona, two teams that won their respective domestic leagues by a combined aggregate score of 11-0.
Well, they have to be considered the best team now because they've won. But
yes,
up until the final, it was easy to say that these were the two best teams just because of the way that Borussia got out of that group stage.
The group of death.
That's right. You know, undefeated. And I think this is actually their first. No, they lost against Real Madrid. But yeah. So this is their second defeat of the entire tournament.
Yes. Which is pretty impressive.
It is. You got to give them credit for that much.
Even Bayern had lost one game in the group stage.
And then lost the second leg to Arsenal.
But maybe let's just take a look back on some of the other teams. One of the teams that I have kind of been following this year is Ajax. We talked about them and their...
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about Juve. Okay.
No, we talked about Ajax and their years of prominence in the 90s and the 70s. And if you kind of look at it, every 20 years, they seem to be becoming a world power. Now, they have some very good players. The question is whether or not they can keep them.
I think Eriksen's already
Christian Eriksen and Victor Fischer, CM De Jong. They have a lot of good players on that team. It's just whether or not they can keep it together. They used to be able to keep it together, but I thought they were they're a good team, and had they not been in the group of death, they could have...
I would have liked to see where they would have gone. Noise a la FC Basel or something.
Yeah, something like that. Maybe into the second round. I don't know. That's just one of the teams that I thought was a surprise. Was there any teams that were kind of a surprise for you? Maybe
other than how bad Manchester City was?
Same group. Seems like we've been talking about that group a lot.
Okay, let's give some love to Malaga, who, you know, kind of...
Yeah, with all the stuff going on there... the impending bankruptcy or, you know, not being able to pay half the players.
They were a nice underdog story for a while, even if it was by their own doing. So,
yeah,
that was a nice surprise to see. It's always nice to see teams that, you know, you don't expect to, you know, it would be really crappy if everything went to chalk, as they say, you know, to borrow an NCAA Sweet 16 or the tournament there. Phrase that I just butchered like crazy. It would be boring to see that happen every time. So it's nice to see teams like Malaga, you know, every once in a while, a Porto when they win, even though, you know, I think they're bigger than most people think they are, but that's just me.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with Malaga in the future. As we know, Manuel Pellegrini seems to be on his way to Manchester City as manager, taking over for Roberto Mancini.
Surprise,
but that's another story for another EFW episode. I also think Juventus could be a team that can make a jump next year.
Who?
Juventus.
A jump to where?
See, I was hoping for you to ask the question at some point, because when I bring it up, it's like, oh, well, look at Dan. He's bringing up Juventus again because he's such a big fan.
Consistency of the show is very important. So. All right, Dan, what are your opines on Juve and how they can, you know, make that next level?
Oh, well, they're going to win the tournament next year. Fernando Llorente's coming in. 35 goals, at least, bro.
When's the last... Bro. Hold on. I got to turn on my glow sticks. When's the last time that Juve had a striker that scored 35 goals?
Hasn't been for a long time. Yeah. Maybe David Trezeguet was close. I don't think Ibrahimovic was very close. But
I don't think I think this last year is actually his best statistical year.
But it's also the Serie A. So 30 goals in the Serie A is like your god. It's only people like Gabriel Batistuta that do that kind of stuff.
Batigol.
Okay.
Next thing you know, we're going to get that really cheesy Juve song going soon here.
We should. Oh, I love that song. Anyways,
love music.
Move on before I start singing it. European Football Weekly. I'm Dan Riccio, Derek Brandeo. We're kind of just chit-chatting about a lot of different stuff here right now as we wrap up the show. Neymar. We talked about him a little bit with Jared Peters and his impending arrival at the Camp Nou. There's a lot of different questions here. Can he work in a system that is so catered to Lionel Messi? Can he do what he does in Brazil in a more prominent league? I think he'll still be able to score oodles and oodles of goals against most teams he plays against. It's the upper tier of teams that I want to see him play against.
The Robinho question, as they say in Brazil. Will he be Robinho or will he be Ronaldo? It's tough, and considering that he's going to be changing positions or coming back more into midfield to receive the ball when he's going to be playing from Barcelona, as he won't be the focal point anymore, it's going to be an interesting transition for him. And if I was, I can understand the lure of playing with Barcelona, but something inside me just says that he might have been better off going somewhere where he would have been the man, just to get that exposure himself, you know, and to be the face of soccer that he's, that everyone thinks that he's going to be. So it just doesn't seem to be the progression that'll happen if he goes to Barcelona.
Yeah, and I mean, his other choice, it seems, is Real Madrid over Barcelona, but even there, he would not be the guy. It's obviously CR7 at the Bernabeu.
But the thing is, there's a different style of play there. He'd obviously be probably coming in off the right side. And because of the new coach, we don't know how exactly things will be deployed there. So, and there really isn't, they're more of the counter-attacking side. So there's not the focal point on attack consistently as there would be for like Lionel Messi. Lionel Messi gets 90 touches a game.
It's ridiculous.
That's unheard of for a striker.
Absolutely unheard of. And another thing with Barcelona is that they are so built for their youth system and built towards, you know, everything starts from the youth system.
Their game style has to be something that's ingrained in through.
Exactly. You know, and that's the problem that Alexis Sanchez has had moving over from Italy, where he had a lot of success, moving to Barcelona, where he's had some success, but not nearly the 40 million euros that, you know, not worthy of the 40 million euros that they paid for him. And a lot of people would say that it has to do with Barcelona and the way they are structured and how so many of their players are from their youth system and they just know every little inner working of that system, that it's hard for a person on the outside to just come in and transition seamlessly.
Know when to make those runs that, you know, that Pedro was making that 1 year where he scored.
And Iniesta and all those guys.
It's that kind of connection that the players have is very difficult to build up. And it looks like that every time they bring in someone, especially up front, I don't know, maybe they should try bringing in more help in the middle and the back. That might be a little easier, but the guys up front do seem to even have, catching up to speed. Even Fabregas looks like he's not up to speed sometimes. And that's something that you'd have to start worrying as if you were a player, just because of the history of all of the other guys you've come in.
Yeah, that's for sure. And there's a lot of questions. We were just talking about it with Brent. We mentioned Brent isn't the biggest footy fan on the planet, but we're in the middle of converting him. And he was asking us about Neymar and what is so special about this guy. And I can't tell you that I sit at home and I stream Brazilian league games every once a week to watch Neymar and all the things that he's so great at. From what I have seen of him, he's a great technical player, incredible pace, and he can get around any player, it seems. He can get around anybody. But will that translate when he's playing against a higher caliber of opponent? He's a YouTube sensation. So much of the football world sees him in a little 20-second video on Twitter scoring a ridiculous goal where he gets through 8 guys in the same run and scores, finishes, but he's not going to be able to do that against highest level opponents in the Champions League and whatnot.
He definitely has some goals that look like they defy the laws of physics. That he's able to just circle players and just...
Bill Nye the Science Guy would not be able to break those down, the physics of that.
Bill Nye can break anything down. Okay. I don't know what you're talking about. He's greater than Neymar.
Bill!
I have no idea what that was just there.
Isn't that the song?
I've lost my point with that.
Oh, come on. I was just referencing the Bill Nye the Science Guy song, right? Brent, am I right there?
You are right.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. All right.
Let's move on.
Jose Mourinho seems like he's on his way to Chelsea. Carlo Ancelotti seems like he's on his way to Real Madrid. Being a Real Madrid fan, as I am a Juventus fan, how do you think Carlo Ancelotti fits at Real Madrid right now? Is he a better fit than Jose Mourinho was? I mean, so much of the talk right now is how Mourinho did so badly at Real Madrid.
He's definitely,
but it's like, geez, what have you done for me lately, people? He broke records last year.
It doesn't matter. It's a culmination of many things. You know, the transgression against St. Eker, which has turned off a lot of people.
The fact he didn't even name him in the squad for their last match.
Oh, he's definitely leaving scorched earth behind them. It's definitely that there's not going to be.
He's just taking it to another level now.
Oh, he's even gone out and basically stated that on his team, Diego Lopez plays 100% of the time over Iker Casillas. So I don't know what Iker did per se. If it's just as simple as, you know, saying that we need to be friends with Barcelona and not fight them. It just can't be that. It has to be more than just something simple like that. But Mourinho, you know, doesn't take well to, you know, I guess the black sheep of his team. And he's going to lose this war because St. Eker is going to be there next year. And Ancelotti's probably better for the circus that is Real Madrid because he's very laid back. And
he's really good at man management.
Yeah.
If you look at some of those Milan teams that he had to just kind of coordinate his way through the egos of those teams.
And not just that, Silvio Berlusconi.
Yeah, he had to work with Silvio Berlusconi, which is just beyond comprehension.
Hey, if you don't know anything, if you want to Google Silvio Berlusconi, the last thing that'll probably come up is the fact that he's the owner of AC Milan with all the stuff that's going on.
You might find his underage girlfriends first.
And his, what were his parties called again?
I don't even know. Don't want to mention it.
Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Bill Nye the Science Guy.
See, that's what I was talking about.
Bill Nye the Science Guy.
But you only said it three times there. They say it four.
Okay, let's find the spot.
Science.
It's
rules.
Somewhere in here. I know it's in here somewhere.
Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Inertia is a property of matter.
Bill Nye.
It's coming. It's coming.
Bill Nye the Science Guy.
I told you, Bill. See what I'm talking about? I was right.
Again, you said it only three times there.
Oh, whatever.
Put the glow sticks away.
You're no fun!
Put the glow sticks away.
Oh, we've gone off the rails here. Yes, we have. I want to shout out Gord Brunt before we leave. At GordBrunt590. He
somewhere in the plains of Scotland.
Yeah, he's drinking ginger beer right now.
Could it be Krabby? Or
It's probably Krabby's.
It's probably Krabby's, right?
Yeah, like we talked about on our last show. You can find all of our, you know, webcasted shows on iTunes or sportsnet590.ca. As John Molinaro said, he's going to be putting up the list of all of our shows on sportsnet.ca shortly. But yes, I wanted to shout out to Gord. He's watching his hometown squad, Hibernian, in the Scottish Cup final against Celtic, which they will lose, making a big final prediction there.
All your money on that
putting
one?
Putting all my money on that one.
Betting the house.
And if they lose, I'm probably homeless.
I raise you all my money and three Rod Stewart.
What are the odds on that? Check Bet365 or something. It's probably like minus 2,000 or, you know.
Can't be that.
100-1 odds that Hibernian beat Celtic.
I would say 10-1.
Well, if Dortmund were 4-1 to beat Bayern today, what do you think Hibernian would be to beat Celtic in the Scottish Cup final?
Look it up. You got a computer?
Yeah, I guess I should. I'm too lazy.
All right.
Not going to do it.
I'm going to say 10-1.
10-1. Okay. Well, we wish Gord luck as he watches the Scottish Cup final in Glasgow tomorrow. We should have done a live hit with him, but like I said, he's probably a few too many ginger beers in at this point.
One too many Krabbies.
It's a downfall of us all. Derek, any parting thoughts before we go here?
Just enjoy the transfer hoopla that's going to happen and the carousel or merry-go-round of managers that looks like is going to seem to be happening.
Oh, it's already happening. You know, one of the greatest stories out of Italy, Walter Mazzarri. Okay, he left
the man
Napoli.
Who left Napoli to go
he
to
left
Inter.
Napoli to go to Inter. They made it official this morning, I guess. And what the Napoli owner said, and I'm just paraphrasing here, he says in reference to Mazzarri, it's like you can keep your wife, you can make your wife stay with you with a lot of money, but if she decides to cheat on you, well, then she's going to cheat on you. Something in those in that language there. I, you know, obviously it was a little bit more colorful in Italian.
I'm guessing that something's happened to him where he could draw upon that kind of reference.
Yes.
From before.
Probably. He's probably on 8 or 9 wives at this point. But the great rumor is Mazzotti left Napoli because he knows Edinson Cavani will not be around.
So he knows that the ship is sinking.
Yeah, but apparently Rafa Benitez's first target is Edin Dzeko if Napoli or if Mr. Cavani departs. But as you said, the carousel of transfers and what's rumor and what's real is almost impossible to float through.
It's like trying to find the needle in the haystack, right?
It most definitely is. I'm Dan Riccio. That was the voice of Derek Brandeo. We are wrapping up our Champions League review show. We hope you enjoyed it. I want to thank John Molinaro, Gerard Peters, Nigel Reed, Bobby McMahon, Derek Brandeo, Brent Gunning, my man,
and Dan Riccio,
and Bill Nye the Science Guy. Because he's awesome.
I agree.
And I want to congratulate Bayern Munich on their 5th European Cup title.
I would like to also congratulate them because of, you know, all the bridesmaids headlines that would have come up with them losing a third one would have just been too much to take.
All right. Congratulations, Bayern Munich. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next week on European Football Weekly, Sportsnet 590. The Fan!